Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are a few places in the war for the free world that are more momentous, I think it's fair to say, at this particular point in time, than the Western Pacific. And a man who has spent a lot of time thinking about our interests there as well as more broadly, particularly the importance of those waters to our economy as well as to our security, is our first guest. He is the former Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy in the Reagan and Bush administrations. He also served as an assistant to my old boss, Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense at the time. He was a naval officer in his own right in 1985 to 2004. These days, we find him as the director of the Center for American Sea Power with the Hudson Institute. He is the author of numerous publications, but particularly of note are one that is a favorite of mine, Mayday, The Decline of American Naval Supremacy, and a book not yet published, it will be out in 2 weeks' time, entitled Sea Blindness. Seth Cropsey, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, I'd like to start, I guess, with that Western Pacific business. The South China Sea, as we've discussed in the past, Seth, has been increasingly declared by the Chinese to be a sort of inland water for them, a part of their territory. And they have been seizing, manufacturing, and fortifying islands all over it to try to ensure that they can actually back up those claims to the waters. Talk a little bit with us, if you would, particularly against the backdrop of rising tensions and dangers with respect to their proxies in North Korea, about those waters and our ability to project power in and through them.
Well, the most interesting thing that I've seen in the past week or so that connects North Korea with South China Sea is the North Korean ruler's threat to launch missiles in the vicinity of Guam. Guam is just the right distance, over 1,000 miles from Asian mainland, so that that threat must be delighting the Chinese, because that's exactly what China's policy in the region has been vis-a-vis the United States, which is the so-called anti-area denial, access denial, which is to say to make it impossible for or extremely difficult for the United States to project power into the region. So in that sense, what's going on right now is connected to China's longstanding policy of asserting, wrongfully, illegally asserting territorial sovereignty over the international waters of the South China Sea.
And it reminds us of how misbegotten has been, I think, successive administrations' conviction, which seems to be shared to some extent, at least by President Trump, that the Chinese will somehow dissuade the North Koreans from doing what the Chinese evidently see as advantageous to them and in their interest.
But yeah, that's right. But it seems as though, I mean, there was a couple of tweets from Trump, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, where he said that he was disappointed in the Chinese ruler's ability to rein in the North Koreans. It seems as though he gets it.
He seems to get it at some levels, and others, as we'll be talking about in the course of the show, it seems as though he's trying to also continue to cajole the Chinese into being helpful. Let me ask you about one other piece of this that I think is incredibly important, Seth Cropsey, and that is the extent to which we have built into the Navy's assets, an anti-missile capability that may be of exceptionally great importance in dealing with what the North Koreans are serving up at the moment. Could you talk a little bit about Aegis at Sea?
The Navy's been at work on this problem for well over 20 years. The Aegis system coordinates targeting information and information about, obviously, incoming missiles to provide solutions in the form of what is now the Standard Missile 3, with an advertised ability, proven ability to hit ballistic missiles. So the Navy has a role to play there. I think that there's an opportunity here that the United States has failed to exercise over the past 35 years or so since President Reagan said that we would defend against ballistic missiles, and that is to develop missiles that are capable of, that can hit ballistic missiles while they're close, and also while they're at a greater distance. And that's not, we don't have that yet. And our ballistic missile defense has been sporadic, and I think that the North Korean threats should be a ringing call to look back at this seriously and make the kind of sustained investments that would provide much better defense.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, particularly I think our capacity to hit missiles in their boost phase, which would be ideal while they're over their own territory, the attackers, rather than elsewhere. Let me ask you, Seth, you've been writing recently about the Balkans. We've not been, many of us at least, paying much attention to that part of the world since, well, I guess the 1990s. But you're warning that the Russians may be moving in there, in at least sort of their now well-established form of sort of proxy warfare. This has a naval dimension to it as well, insofar as the Mediterranean, the Black Sea, and other littoral waters are all being increasingly populated by Russian vessels, it seems. Talk both about what's going on the land and in those waters that should be of concern to us, Seth Cropsey.
Well, in fact, Russia has supported the Serbs for a long, long time, going back to before World War One. Yugoslavia was the land of the southern Slavs. Putin sees an opportunity in the to break up the Dayton Accords, which have always been fragile at best, by appealing to the Serbs in Bosnia, the Bosnian Serbs. And at the same time that's happening, the Turks are supporting Albanian efforts, Albanians who live in Kosovo, who want to reunite with the motherland, with Albania, as well as, I mean, it's all very complicated, but as well as, because that's the Balkans, but as well as ethnic Albanians in Macedonia who would like to reunite with Albania. And there's increasing friendliness between the Turks and the Russians on this, because both of them see it as a way to sort of stick it to the West. Turkey falls into the category of what my colleague Walter Russell Mead calls, or maybe others as well, but I've seen Walter write it, NATO in name only. So it's an unholy partnership there between Moscow and Ankara.
And it's really sort of flipping matches into a powder keg on a good day, and the danger is not only to stick it to the West, but have very profound implications for the continent and our interests there as well. Seth, we're out of time, I'm afraid. We have got so much more to talk about. We didn't get to Iran sending a flotilla off into the Western Atlantic. That will be for another day. Perhaps the occasion of a prolonged discussion of Sea Blindness, your upcoming book, which we look forward to with great expectation. Thank you for the time today, though. Former Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy, Seth Cropsey, now with the Hudson Institute. It's great to talk with you as always, and I look forward to doing so again soon. Next up, we'll talk with Dan Gallington. We'll get his take on the Russia probe and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. Thank you.